Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The idea for this show came from a listener a few weeks ago who said, you know, they're not teaching much long handwriting or cursive writing in schools anymore. We did a little bit of digging and found that in the Common Core standards, there is a call for teaching legible writing, but only in kindergarten and first grade. And then the emphasis will shift to proficiency on the keyboard. There are many psychologists and neuroscientists who think that handwriting is very, very important. It's really good for your brain. It's good for your memory. And so we're going to be talking about this hour of our program. Our guest has been working on the scientific reasons for writing in longhand for many, many years now. Professor Virginia Berninger is professor of educational psychology at the University of Washington, and her research focuses on nature-nurture interactions and learning to read and write. She studies types of functional reading and writing systems and related oral language and non-language processes in typically developing language learners and students with dyslexia and also other learning disabilities. Once we said we were going to talk about this on Facebook, we have all kinds of comments, so I have a feeling that our phone lines are just going to light up during this hour. The benefits of cursive writing. Virginia has done many studies on this, most recently following children in grades 2, 4, and 6, and showed that printing, cursive writing, and typing on a keyboard are all associated with distinct and separate brain patterns, and that writing has an important brain pattern that we should all learn. So we'll be welcoming phone calls. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Would you agree or disagree that we should teach legible handwriting? Legible was always my problem, but only in kindergarten and first grade, and then shift to proficiency on the keyboard because that's what most of us use, or do you think we need more than just kindergarten and first grade in teaching and working on long handwriting, cursive writing? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Professor Berninger, thank you very much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You probably have a handle on what's going on in the country. It came as a surprise to me, because we no longer have children in kindergarten or first grade, that many schools are not teaching cursive much at all anymore. Is that happening all over the country?
That is my understanding. It was a surprise to me, too. I learned this in 2012 at the National Handwriting Symposium.
And the reasons given at that symposium were that we're all going to keyboard, so why learn cursive?
Well, I'm a clinical psychologist, so I'm always trying to understand why when people are involved. And as best I can figure it out, because we now have computers, people seem to think we can use keyboards and we don't need traditional handwriting anymore. But I'm a big believer. I mean, my current research involves using computers. I want to teach kids how to use computers also. It's just that we've left handwriting behind without carefully looking at not only research, but kids' learning.
So tell me the studies. I know you've done many of them, but the one that's been highlighted recently are these tests of second, fourth, and sixth grade children and their composition of essays and how they were able to do those using a pen rather than using a keyboard. What were the advantages?
Well, that was from the longitudinal study, and it's not our most recent work. But briefly, what we found is that children, when they could use pen and paper, wrote more words, they wrote them faster, and they expressed more ideas with paper and pen than with the keyboard. But we think we know why now. That was because the children only were hunting and pecking. We're not teaching touch typing to children in our elementary schools. And when you can do touch typing, maybe you can compose more. We're now looking at that. I don't know the answer yet. I do know that we continue to find up to about the sixth grade, there does seem to be advantage for composing in handwriting.
Mm-hmm. And something happens in the brain that there are advantages to printing, advantages to cursive, and advantages to the keyboard. What part of the brain is activated with long handwriting?
Okay. I first need to explain that there's some misunderstanding out there. We did publish in 2006, based on children starting this, we called it Literacy Trek. We started studying them in grades 1 or grade 3. And we looked at their beginning ability to learn to print, to do cursive, and then the keyboarding. And we did find that there were different clinical measures, which we call neuropsychology measures, that predicted the printing, the cursive, and the keyboarding. As for the brain, all of our studies to date, and we've done several of them with handwriting, spelling, and other writing skills, we have always used manuscript printing while their brains are being scanned. We did find, however, on a task where all we asked them to do was tap their fingers in sequence while they're laying in the scanner, because this task, which they have been trained on, is very much like a clinical measure we give where children have to imitate sequential finger movements, and that task is very predictive of children's handwriting ability. In that study, we did find a correlation of their printing outside the scanner with their activation during finger sequencing, and we did not find it with the other modes of writing, cursive and keyboarding. But that might simply be because these children had had much more experience with printing than cursive when they were studied. So I want to be cautious. We do study the brain, and we know something about the brain's relationship to handwriting, but I cannot say we have found different neural pathways, meaning like white fiber tracks, that would support printing versus cursive.
What if you were to design a curriculum in terms of learning printing, learning writing, learning keyboard, what do you think is best for young children?
Well, I'm going to draw on research. And this research has been done by brain imaging researchers in our country and also in the other country. And I'm also going to draw on the research on teaching writing, which has been done in many countries. And there's a pretty clear finding. It's pretty simple. Yes, we need to teach manuscript writing, printing. Why? Because most of the reading material that we and our children read is in manuscript form. The fonts may change, but it's printing. And indeed, research has shown you teach printing manuscript, and they get better at reading the words.
Mm-hmm.
They're better at perceiving the letters because they've learned to produce them. And that's a general principle in psychology. Production facilitates our perception. Okay, now we have just published an article. It's online Journal of Writing Research. It's an international journal. And I would say it's probably the leading journal for the international writing research community. And what we found in that, the first author is Zachary Alsted, who just got his PhD and is now at Landmark, working with kids with learning disability. And we also looked at that longitudinal study, and we found that if you look at printing, cursive, and keyboarding, consistently it's the cursive handwriting that predicts the spelling and the composing. And Liz Sanders in my department is a statistician who analyzed this data from a multi-level framework. And we think this is because with cursive letters, you not only have curved lines to form them, but you have connecting strokes. So with cursive, you learn to link the letters together in word units. And the more children attend to word units, the better they become in their spelling. And I'm not giving up on keyboards. I think a lot of kids are just using them at home. They're hunting and pecking. They certainly are using text tools, and this is good. This is the era we live in. But I don't think we're integrating instruction in how to use the keyboards meaningfully in our programs at school related to language and other content areas. And so we're currently using the computer to teach touch typing and the kinds of assignments that children are given, particularly grades 4 and above. And why are we focused mostly on grades 4 and above? That's because the brain pathways between the left and the right are continuing to mature. And around the beginning of early adolescence, there's reason to think that those fiber tracks allow the left and right to communicate better. Why should this matter? If you do touch typing, you have to use both of your hands. So the right hand is going to send signals to the left hand. The left hand is going to send signals to the right hand. Sorry, the right side of the brain. So right hand, left side of the brain, left hand, right side of the brain. But you need a communication track up there so left and right works together. Well, once that is possible, there's going to be advantages for using computers for certain tasks. So the bottom line is, and we think the research supports this, that we need to train children to be hybrid writers in the computer age. After all, we have hybrid cars now. Why not teach them the manuscript, like we always did,
right,
two grades, then the cursive, the next two grades, and introduce the touch typing around grades 4 or 5, and then during middle school, teach them how to use the computer, first drafts, revisions, those written assignments, the homework. The ways they're going to need to use this, particularly if they go on not only to college, but also the work world. So it could be a great opportunity for teaching many things.
And I'm not sure I understand. When you say touch typing, does that mean just sort of picking out letters or using it as a typewriter, like I learned how to use a typewriter, and just transfer that skill to the computer?
Thank you for asking that question. I don't know how you were taught with the typewriter, but we were taught an approach where you had to learn to use your fingers on the keys without looking at the keys.
Yes.
That's what I call touch typing.
Right, I see.
Yeah, that can be very effective. And as I talk to adults, those who've had touch typing love using their computers. That those who hunt and peck, it's not as easy for them.
Right.
Sometimes. Yeah. So I think, and to finish this little story, you brought up the Common Core, and this does seem to be what has changed handwriting practice. And we are very concerned. I mean other people in my field as well, are very concerned that Common Core was developed without a very firm grounding in the developmental research of how children learn to read, write, do math, and so on, and also concern about individual differences, because we also do a lot of genetics research, and we're very concerned about children who have a condition called dysgraphia, which means even when they try very hard, they can't write legible letters. And And it affects a fair number of children and youth, as well as some parents. And we're very concerned that they may need some individually tailored instruction. We have shown in research you can teach them handwriting, so it's easier for them. But you have to identify it, and you have to have specialized instruction. And Common Core just has not built in those individual differences and what research is saying about typical development and then the kind of variations that are sometimes normal in development. So I'm not saying we shouldn't have standards that we, you know, the goalposts in the game, they're important. But we need to spend more time thinking about, so how are we going to help everybody get there in their own way?
We have many, many people who would like to speak to this issue, and we will go to your phone calls momentarily. The importance of handwriting, is it important? Do we need to spend more time on it in school instead of, as Common Core standards would suggest, just concentrating on cursive writing in kindergarten and first grade? What about learning how to use a computer, to not look at the computer while you're typing? And is it okay, because we're using computers more and more, if we lessen the amount of hours that we spend teaching cursive and printing? Or does it do valuable things to our brains that it's a skill that we should all have and not let go away? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. We have a number of people commenting on Facebook. It's a pretty popular little site here today, so it's fun to read, and we will read many of your comments. Joe Leonard writes, I thought only medical schools banned good handwriting. Maybe broadcasting schools, too. Mine is so horrible. It keeps getting worse. But I'm fast on that old computer. And somebody else, Luke, writing, teach handwriting at the expense of what? Math, science, technology? The STEM fields are the place to be right now. I work in engineering. I have a very good job and use written communication all the time. But I can't remember the last time someone had to read something I wrote by hand. Food for thought, and we'll be to your phone calls. Our lines are filled right now, but keep trying. You'll get through eventually. 800-486-8655. Dr. Virginia Berninger is our guest, and she is at the University of Washington, where she is a professor of educational psychology. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to the first of our many phone calls. Linda in Sturgeon Bay. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Linda.
Yes, I'm a speech-language pathologist. I work in both the public schools and the rehab setting, the hospitals, nursing homes. We have a shortage up here of speech pathologists, so I have the opportunity of working in both those settings. And handwriting is an essential skill that I use within the therapy program.
And why? How do you use it?
Well, I find that, you know, number one, for students, many times it's a way for them to reinforce the skills of the vocabulary they're learning in the classroom. But also in the rehab setting, you know, for many patients, that is their primary skills. They're not keyboarders. Many of them, you know, their signature really is their personality. So for many of them, working on, if they're able to write, we work on writing skills, of course, where I'm working alongside occupational therapy, because they're working on the skill of writing. I'm working on the vocabulary and the expression of writing.
Mm-hmm.
In a rehab setting. In a school setting, it is an issue with Common Core. We do have response and intervention. So when we have students who do have writing problems, primarily the main areas of testing are in math and reading. We don't have any formal ways of measuring we do have measures in the schools for writing, of course, but in terms of RTI, which is a tiered level intervention, don't specifically have one for writing. And I agree with your guest that that's something that probably needs to be worked on. And unfortunately, you know, the schools are always pushing here, you got to have this, got to have that, they got to do this, got to do that. So they're in our tremendous amount of pressure in order to comply with what, you know, they're being, you know, what's being asked of them. And one of the things, unfortunately, that I saw that kind of went out the door is the cursive. So I think connected writing is important. I did live in Sweden for a year, and in that country, they teach somewhat of a hybrid writing where it is a combination of print and cursive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, they don't learn one and then learn the other. They learn this from the very beginning.
So when they write, they do a combination of print some letters and write some letters?
If they're connected, it's kind of a combination of print and cursive.
I see. Dr. Berninger.
Yes. Oh, you want me to?
Sure.
Okay, well, people don't think of this, but language isn't one thing. We have language by ear when we listen. We have language by mouth when we speak. We have language by eye when we read, and we have language by hand when we write. And so one of the things we also know from research is that developing children need to learn expertise in all of these. So it's not surprising to me that this listener is finding the value of handwriting as she does therapy. Also, children and adults have problems with language for many different reasons, and it's going to affect some people's writing more than their reading or vice versa. And we need flexibility in the system. And while this isn't directly related to handwriting, what I'm going to say next, it is relevant. We live in an era where we have taken professional autonomy from our schools to let teachers make instructional decisions for their classroom, what they're going to teach and how, and yet we help hold them accountable. That doesn't happen in other professions. We have people on the top, policymakers, government officials, and so on, dictating what teachers should do in the classroom. We went in other professions like psychology, law profession, medical profession, that doesn't happen. So I really think the solution is going to be broader than just what we're teaching in, about handwriting or what's in the Common Core, to a change in the way we let educators educate our children.
They should certainly be comprising the majority of the board of people who are making educational decisions,
exactly.
No doubt. Yeah. Thanks, Linda, very much for your call. Why is it, and I'm wondering if most schools are good at teaching cursive. I look at people in my family, I look at me, and I have absolutely atrocious handwriting. And it's one of the reasons I learned to type, and I'm really fast on the typewriter, and so that's what I use so people can read what I write. Is there, and I'm wondering if it's associated with art in some way, is it just that we're not spending enough time teaching a good hand, teaching cursive that can be read by other people? Because if you can't read it, what's the reason to even learn it? You know, if nobody can read what you're writing except you, and sometimes I can't even read my own writing.
Well, the good news is with handwriting instruction, less is more. It's what you do during that handwriting instruction. And yes, there are individuals who've had struggles with handwriting because maybe it hasn't been taught in the most effective way. What we do in our teaching and research is we do warm-ups before we write, because the real purpose of writing is to express ideas and communicate with others. So we teach the handwriting as part of a warm-up exercise, and we tell the students it's just like before the sports event, those athletes have done warm-up exercises, or before a concert, the pianist will practice the scales, that kind of thing. So we do it 5-10 minutes at most. The next thing is you don't just have kids copy letters. You use your time wisely. You only practice each of the letters of the alphabet once in a session, and we give them numbered arrow cues. So we give them a plan for making the letter, but they also have to close their eyes and see the letter in their mind's eye and then write it from memory. So from the beginning, we're teaching them how to form the letters and how to see them in their mind and then get them out of their mind. And it really works. And the thing that's very interesting is handwriting ability is not the same as drawing. Some kids are great at art, and it's harder for them with handwriting.
They are. That's
interesting. Or vice versa. And the other thing we've learned over the years, so many kids, when they go to express their ideas, they want to draw and illustrate. Well, after all, how many books have illustrators
sure.
as well as authors? So I think along with this handwriting, we should also give more children permission to illustrate what they write.
Let's go to Mary next in Eau Claire. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Interesting discussion. This reminded me of a discussion I had with some friends a few years ago, and all of us were amateur writers or poets. Some of them were editors. And we commented that when we write things by hand, the content we produce feels different than if we do it on a keyboard.
How so?
Well, none of us could put a finger on it, but it just felt, I don't know, like it used a different part of the brain.
Mm-hmm. You think it was better? That your work was better?
No, not necessarily. If I'm writing something, you know, technical, factual, I mean, I immediately go to the keyboard. But if I have to go to something, you know, more creative and I don't know where I'm going, then I'll go to something handwritten. And my handwriting is terrible, by the way. I was telling your the guy who answers
Scotty.
The phone. You know, I had to stand from recess to practice my handwriting.
Oh, no, Mary.
I'm still pissed off about it.
Oh, mine is just as bad as yours. I didn't have to do in from recess, but somebody told me to learn to type pretty early on, which was good. So what do studies show? Is there a difference in what we write about if we're writing longhand or if we're using a keyboard? What she said was interesting. She's better goes for technical reasons. But when we're poetic, it's better to do it in longhand? Do you have any studies, Professor?
We want to turn to research for an answer to that question, is the work of Charles MacArthur at the University of Delaware. And he was one of the pioneers in using computers to study how children learn to write. And he found that for the first draft, it's often more productive to write it by hand. You just get your thoughts down there. Then when you're trying to revise it, and good writers always revise and revise and revise, the computer can be quite helpful with the keyboard to go through that revision process. So again, I think it's okay that we use different modes of letter production for different writing purposes. And I have noted, though, the theme of struggling with handwriting and having, you know, negative affect about handwriting. One of our recent findings is that in these children we are studying now, grades 4 to 9, with persisting writing problems, we are getting so much, we're finding things in our emotional brain, the limbic system, that differ between the ones who are struggling and the ones who are typical writers and aren't having those struggles. And it's really affected me. I just think, you know, we don't always see it when we're working with our students of school age, how upsetting it might be to them when their handwriting doesn't come out the way they would like it to, or they feel other people can't read it. And it does create emotional responses. So right now we're also working on what can we do to help students not have this negative affect about handwriting or writing in general, and we're turning to them and asking their perspectives and opinions on this. We're not turning just to the researchers and the teachers. I think we also have to look at what it's like to learn to write from the perspective of the writer who is in that journey.
Mm-hmm. Mary, I'm just going to move to another call. We have tons of them. Jim and Spooner is next. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there? Well, Jim is gone. So we go to Dolores in Kenosha. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hi. At the beginning of this, I was thinking about when you were talking about what ages we're starting this. Kindergarten and first grade to learn how to do cursive. I'm sorry. I think that counts out a whole lot of kids who don't have access to preschool. There are, there are people that I have known, my kids aren't among them, who did preschool in when they were 3 years old or 4 years old or whatnot. How frustrating is that for them to try and do that at that age? And how can they really progress? My husband is a high school teacher, and he does have a lot of ESL students whose parents are right into it, and a lot of his other parents also. But how can we make it successful for these kids if we're tossing them into this? And I was an art student, so I do not text. I don't know how to type. I do the hunt and peck, et cetera, et cetera. And how do you... I'm sorry. I just don't think that kindergarten and first grade is the age to start this.
Do you have problems with the age, Professor?
Well, first of all, Common Core isn't suggesting you teach cursive in K and 1. It's manuscript printing that the children are also seeing in their reading material. And there's a field that specializes in handwriting development. And actually, we know quite a bit from about age 10 months when children make their first mark on a paper when handed a writing tool to the age when handwriting instruction has historically been introduced, kindergarten and first grade, about the normal development. And there's lots of activities and things that can be done. And I know a lot of our work took us into schools with low-income children. And those children can learn when taught appropriately. And there are people who specialize in the early writing development of children across different SES or socioeconomic groups. And it does come down to teacher knowledge and how this can be integrated into the classroom. I believe one of the listeners raised the issue of time. How can there be enough time to teach handwriting? The people who do this skillfully, they only spend a little bit of time integrating the handwriting part towards the other goals in writing and math, which engage kids intellectually. So I really don't personally believe or think research supports teaching handwriting in isolation for the pure sake of isolation. Where I've seen it work is when children have a warm-up with some handwriting, but then they compose something, they read it to their writing buddies, they might share it with others in the classroom or publish a book. There's some authentic communication purpose. And as one of my students said, handwriting is like the paintbrush of the artist. You wouldn't expect them to paint without a paintbrush, but there's a whole lot more to artistic expression than just the paintbrush.
Mm. We had an interesting comment from Lori on Facebook. Maria Montessori knew this over a century ago, and cursive is still an integral part of Montessori curriculum. Children in the primary classroom, 3 to 6 year old, start by tracing sandpaper letters with their fingers while being taught the sound of that individual letter. The hand is a necessary and powerful learning tool, and we should be trying to figure out more ways for kids to learn with their hands, not less. Pushing a button on a screen or a keyboard doesn't compare to the complex series of motions that it takes to form a letter. I wish schools would realize this and stop pushing the keyboard and tablet technology on kids, or at least wait until their writing skills are fully developed. What do you think of that comment?
Well, I collaborate with writing researchers in many countries, and some of them are in the countries where they start teaching 4 and 5 year olds cursive. And as best as we can figure out when we put our data together, there's no reason to think one form of handwriting is superior to another in the early stages. I do think there's evidence across countries that we should be teaching handwriting, but and we are finding some advantages for each of the formats contributing to writing development. But I don't think it's real productive to get into which kind of handwriting is superior or whether or not we should teach handwriting. There is just too much evidence for the writing path to literacy, and I haven't discussed a lot of that. And it goes beyond handwriting. But frankly, if you can't spell the words, it's going to interfere with your learning to read also. I just think that the listener that brought up the issue, how can you possibly teach this with everything else? We live in the STEM era. I do think we need to give some attention to how we package these instructional components, and I want to raise the issue. People forget, but math is writing too. You have to write legible numerals. You have to write multi-place numbers. You have to first learn to do paper and pencil arithmetic calculations before you learn to use the computer tools. And now I'm quoting the National Math Panel. So, you know, in some ways, teach them and they'll learn. And there's many different ways we can teach kids and they'll learn, as long as it's reasonably developmentally appropriate.
More phone calls in a moment. Professor Virginia Berninger is our guest this hour, and she is a professor of educational psychology at the University of Washington. We're talking about handwriting, how it may differ from keyboard requiring the sequential strokes to form a letter, and are we abandoning handwriting for the keyboards? When should we teach it? What does it do for us? That's all on the table this hour. Listener suggestions some time ago, and we're taking your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Den Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Anne in Milwaukee, our next caller. Hey, Anne.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question for your guest. She mentioned dysgraphia of people who really can't connect their brains and their hands. We have a charming, almost 11-year-old who's reads like a champ, is doing very well in school, but whose handwriting, both print and cursive, and he's a Montessori kid who's learned cursive from the beginning, are really, really difficult to read. When do we start worrying, if we should start worrying, and what does an involved parent do about it?
Well, I first want to say, I am sad to say I have heard this story over and over and over again, and America has got to wake up.
that this condition is real. Dysgraphia exists just like dyslexia and specific language impairment and dyscalculia exist. And right now, people think if it's not in the special ed laws or some kind of other educational law, they don't have to do anything about it. So I'm personally on a mission directed towards local schools. There is nothing in the law that says you can't proactively just try to help these kids. And like I said, we have published research based on instructional studies. We did that with children in schools. We've done them now with children who come to our research clinics. And even with those children with persisting dysgraphia, like you describe your son, their handwriting can get better. And that said, they should also be taught to use the computer tools, because, and they should be allowed to use them in the classroom for instruction as appropriate. And I just empathize with you. It is treatable. We have things we do, but we can't help people who don't live within driving distance of our university. We've written about it, and now we're taking the mission to the schools. There's a book that was just published by APA Books, the American Psychological Association, called Interdisciplinary Frameworks for Schools, giving professional autonomy and permission to educators in local schools to just proactively help these kids and what they can do to help them. And I'm sorry if I get emotional about this, but there have just been so many kids for so long, and because the word dysgraphia is not used in the federal and state legislation, they think it doesn't exist.
So are you saying that Anne would have a very difficult time finding somebody who could help her son in the Milwaukee area? What you're doing is unusual?
It would depend on, I don't know if she's approached any schools. Under the law, in theory, you should be able to say your child is entitled to a free and appropriate public education, and this starts with a multidisciplinary team assessment for what might be a learning difference or educational handicapping condition. But because none of the states that I'm aware of explicitly use the word dysgraphia for the kids who have unusual struggles in producing these legible letters others can read, schools will dismiss it because they don't think handwriting's important. And particularly if the kid's bright and can read and do other things, they'll think, oh, they're not motivated. They're not exerting the effort. And this is not true. It's a real condition. It has a genetic and a brain basis. And we've come a long way since our first special ed laws in 1975, but we have a long way to go.
Thank you very much, Anne, for your call. I hope you can find some help for your son, Marsha in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi.
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 I'm an occupational therapist. I'm retired, but I did work in the schools and worked with teaching children handwriting, but then, of course, I've heard they're not doing so much of that anymore, but I did have some kids that in middle school who were very disabled and in other ways, and I was surprised with a couple of them that on the computer they were really able, well, three of them, they were really able to express themselves. One of them had autism. The other two had different disabilities, but the other two couldn't even write their names. But on the computer, they could type, and one was started typing stories. So I think definitely it's a different part of the brain that they were working. That's just my opinion. But
well, and I'm glad you mentioned that they had different kinds of disabilities. One of the other ways we're trying to educate schools is that not all learning problems are related to learning disabilities. There are many other kinds of conditions, and they might have biological bases or other causes, where it can affect their writing and reading. And you're referring to the use of alternative technology, where for some individuals, if it doesn't come easily out the mouth, it might come out the hands, using the technology tools. And I've also spent part of my life working with that population, and I'm just happy to hear the story that you recognize that, you were able to help the individuals. And this is why we need to be compassionate, and we have to find what works for whom. And if the computer allows some to express their thinking, wonderful, let's use it. And for others, it might be a combination of handwriting and computers. We have to figure out how the individual learns. And thank you for all the work. It sounds like you've helped a lot of kids.
It does. Thank you, Marcia, for your call. Wendy in New Berlin, hi.
Hi. I was calling because I went to a Catholic grade school, and in third grade, the nuns decided that they would do a test between myself and another left-handed girl, and they forced her to change and write right-handed, and they allowed me to continue writing left-handed. Well, that comes the end of the year, she failed, and I passed. And I have beautiful handwriting. She does not. And it was something that was done by them, and I'm just wondering if you have any comments on that.
Thank you for bringing up the left-handed issue. It's a very important one, and I will confess I'm right-handed. And so I forget about the issues with the left-handers, which are probably 10 to 11% of our population, and interestingly, increasing over time. It seems like there's an evolutionary trend, maybe, to more left-handed.
I didn't know that.
But, yes, there are specialized ways of teaching handwriting for left-handed people. One should not tell the students to use the hand that is not their dominant hand for handwriting. And I have a colleague, Beverly Wolf, who is an expert in handwriting instruction. And I have learned a whole lot from her. It's in some books we've already published with Paul Brooks, H. Brooks in Baltimore, and have a second edition coming out with lots of information on how to position the paper, the child, the hand, so forth, for the left-handers. So that's an important part, too, that we need to prepare teachers before they go into the classroom of how to help the left-handed individuals. And that said, if I might say something with a light comment, I have noticed over the years that many of the left-handed people that I have interacted with excel in the fields that we now call STEM, in math and science and technology, that we really need to reframe left-handedness. It's not something to be afraid of or to think, it's a shame they didn't turn out right-handed. I actually think it might have an evolutionary advantage, but that's just my personal opinion, and I don't have any data.
And on that note, which is an interesting and positive one, we have to say goodbye. Thank you so much, Dr. Berninger, for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thanks to everybody for your calls. If you want to leave more messages on this issue, which captivated many of you, go to our Facebook page and write your comments. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Virginia Berninger is a professor of educational psychology at the University of Washington. Research focuses on nature-nurture interactions and learning to read and also to write. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing the hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up momentarily from National Public Radio, and then many more hours of interesting conversation on the air. I'll be with you again next Monday, tomorrow, and Thursday being holidays for us. So I wish you a very happy, happy new year. And we'll be with you with a brand new 2015. Can you believe that's what it's going to be? All Things Political on Monday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Thanks for listening on the Ideas Network.